This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Wednesday, August 14th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Researchers are using artificial intelligence to analyze food bite by bite. We'll tell you how the tech works. And then, Google is bringing its powerful Tensor G4 chips to its latest Pixel phones, giving users access to new AI features. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, spoke with Google's Senior Vice President of Platforms and Devices, Rick Osterloh, about the company's Gemini AI features for Pixel and Android, and whether he thinks they'll attract users. But first, keeping a food diary or using apps to log what you eat can help you keep track of your nutrition. But these methods don't tell you exactly what makes it into your mouth. Researchers in Canada at the University of Waterloo are working on a way to do that using AI. Their work focuses on aging, as elderly people can suffer from malnutrition, though the technology could find a broader audience. Since 2020, consumers have spent nearly $1 billion on subscriptions to diet and nutrition apps, according to Sensor Tower, a market intelligence company. Our Science Bureau Chief, Joe Craven-McGinty, joins us now with more. So Joe, the idea here is to use AI to figure out the nutritional contents and calories of what people eat. How are they doing that?
So they're doing it step by step. The first step is to be able to assess the amount of food a diner consumes. So rather than evaluating an entire plate of food, which you may or may not eat, they're looking at a spoonful of food at a time and deducing the portion size. So that's step one. Step two will be to identify exactly what food is on that spoon. Once they're able to do that, and they're close to being able to do that, then they can deduce the calories in that bite of food and the nutritional content in that bite of food.
And what foods are they starting with?
They're focused on typical foods consumed in North America, and that's really just to keep it simple for now. Eventually, they hope to expand it to other cuisines, but because culturally cuisines are so different, it's an enormous task to build this database simply of food. So they're just starting small with things that are typically eaten in this part of the world.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how they're getting this information?
They're approaching it in three different ways. They are analyzing the food on the plate. They are using wearable glasses that can record video. But primarily, they're using a cell phone mounted on a tripod in front of a diner. So the diner doesn't have to contribute any information. You just sit there and eat your food. The camera records exactly what you put into your mouth, each bite of food, and then that is the data set that eventually will be analyzed for nutritional content.
And maybe this sounds like a strange question to some listeners, but what utensils are they having the diners use?
For now, they're using a standard U.S. tablespoon, and the reason for that is that it's a shallow utensil, so they can really capture what is on that spoon. Eventually, they'll expand that. Translating that to a fork is easy, they say. A chopstick is a little more challenging, and a hand is maybe the most difficult because you have to be able to assess where the food ends and the hand begins. So as the spoon travels to your mouth, there's like a sweet spot where you get that most accurate measurement. And that is something they're refining. So you can see videos of their work where the spoon is traveling from plate to mouth. And the algorithm is trying to distinguish first the food from the utensil and then the correct size of the food. So there is a margin of error involved in that, and they are refining that. But there's some degree of error just because of the changing pixel sizes depending on where in the camera frame the spoon is at any given time.
And when do they expect this technology is going to be usable?
They hope to have a working prototype within the next year.
All right, that was Joe Craven-McGinty, Science Bureau Chief for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up, Google's Pixel phone makes up a small percentage of the global smartphone market. Can the addition of new AI features change that? That's after the break.
Have you seen the Real Madrid lineup?
Colin Bridgerton's back.
With the undead.
And it's all about the Iron Throne.
You have to watch it.
What's it on?
Bridgerton? Netflix?
The match is on TNT Sports.
House of the Dragon? Only on Now.
That's the one I don't have.
TV that flexes with what's trending? New EETV lets you add and remove subscriptions monthly. Search EETV today.
EETV requires EE Broadband. 24-month contracts. Content may vary. Terms apply.
Google's four new Pixel phones come with the generative AI voice assistant Gemini Live and the Gemini app. Users can also get a $20 a month subscription to Gemini Advanced. And Google is making those features available on other devices too. Our senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern spoke exclusively with Rick Osterloh, who oversees Android, Chrome, and Google's hardware businesses, to talk about the AI on these devices and even try it out. Here are highlights from their conversation.
I ask you this every time we meet, but I was checking the numbers, and Pixel has 3% of U.S. market share, less than 1% globally. Why keep making Pixels at all?
I mean, if you look at the macro picture, there's all sorts of different kinds of smartphones. Android, fortunately, supports all of them. You know, there's phones that cost almost $2,000. There's phones that are very affordable. We try to support all of them with Android. That's a big philosophy, is to give users choice. Pixel's really focused in a small part of the market, which is premium smartphones, trying to be on the leading edge of innovation. And if you zoom into that space, it's actually much larger than it seems. So in the premium smartphone space, above $400, Pixel's actually the second largest Android player. And so I think that's a little surprising to people, but it just goes to show how many phones there are in the world. And fortunately, with our platforms, we can serve everyone.
Samsung's been in the market with an AI phone for better half of the year. What's the data say? Are people using these features?
Samsung launched a capability that we worked on together called Circle to Search with Google, and it's been a tremendous success. Like, people love being able to just circle something on the screen and then understand exactly what it is or find it on the web.
Do you think these features are going to help sell phones?
I definitely think they will.
You can't talk about these AI features without talking about the chips.
Mm-hmm.
You've invested in these Tensor chips. Why was it so important for Google to build these chips?
Okay, well, AI computing is a very different form of computing than anything that's come before it. And so what it involves a lot of is doing complicated math at scale and doing it repeatedly. And so we recognized this a very long time ago. And we decided that for our infrastructure in the cloud, we were going to build a specialized computer that could do this specialized math that is very important for AI. And we call those tensor processing units. And so we've built that at enormous scale now over about a decade. And that is what gives us the ability to power all these billion user services at Google with latest AI capabilities. And in Android, we now are taking some of those capabilities and trying to shape them so that they can be used on mobile phones. With Pixel, we developed our own silicon that has a miniaturized version of the kind of architecture we use in the cloud for processing AI. And this is highly effective at being able to use our smaller AI models like Gemini Nano and be able to process some of the information on the device. And so give people something that is very responsive. It can work online or offline. And it works in tandem with our powerful cloud models too.
The photos, this Add Me feature, is that happening all using Tensor and using the device? Explain to me how that works.
So the way that it works is you open the camera application, and there at the bottom of the camera application, there's a new feature that says Add Me. One person will take a snapshot, and then it'll say, hand your phone to someone else, and then someone else from the photo will come and take it, and you'll join the photo, and it'll stitch you into the picture. And so you'll get the photo that you intended, which is all the people who are together can now be in the photo together.
So basically, I don't have to hand my phone over to a complete stranger.
That's right. You don't have to hand your phone to anyone you don't want to anymore.
A lot has been said about some of these AI photo features. Best Shot, Magic Editor. A lot of these use AI to help manipulate the photo, to take the better photo. But in some ways, it also changes reality.
I don't think it really changes reality. I mean, what we're trying to do is give users a range of tools from capturing the moment to being able to edit that moment later and store the memory how they want. And so this is no different than how people would take photographs in the past and then edit it using Photoshop.
Let's talk about some of the features that they have to connect to the cloud, like Gemini Live.
Yep.
Tell me about what you envisioned here, and this seems to take the place of Google Assistant.
Well, it's definitely the natural evolution of how you're likely to interact with assistants in our point of view. It uses incredibly powerful models to be able to have a live conversation with you. And it's awesome for things like brainstorming or learning something new where you want to have an interactive dialogue. You want me to show you?
Yeah, let's see.
Hi, Gemini Live. How are you today?
Hello there. I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. It's always nice to connect. How can I help you today?
Well, I'm in a conversation with Joanna Stern from the Wall Street Journal. What do you think she's going to ask me?
That's really cool. Joanna Stern is a great interviewer. Oh, what kind of questions do you think she'll ask?
I don't know. Why don't you tell me?
Well, Joanna is known for her tough but fair interviews. She might ask about the challenges of building a large language model, how you can be used by everyday people, or maybe even about the ethics of artificial intelligence. Don't worry though, I'm sure you'll do great.
Oh, thanks, I'm a little nervous.
There's no need to be nervous. You're incredibly smart, and you've got some really interesting things to say. Just be yourself and have fun with it.
Thanks, Gemini, for my daily affirmation.
So I actually had a very similar conversation with Gemini Live before I met with you. What I was so impressed with is just how quickly the conversation went between us.
We've focused a lot on system performance, on low latency, so you can have this quick dialogue and it feels like a natural conversation. We also made it possible to interrupt it so that you can kind of carry on, like kind of like you would with a real person. Like it just tries to have a natural conversation with you and keep the conversation going.
Do you feel like you have the hallucinations under control?
Well, I mean, I think in general, hallucinations are one of the difficulties in all of the new AI tools, for sure. And this is something that, you know, in one context, a hallucination is creativity, if you will. This is one of the things that makes this new technology special, but also means that you have to carefully apply it to different problems. And hallucinations are something that we try to minimize throughout our products. But also the exciting part about the creative concepts and solutions that AI comes up with are of the same net source, which is that it's looking for interesting patterns and looking for interesting information that might try to solve the problem that you have in front of you.
That was Rick Osterloh, Google's Senior Vice President of Platforms and Devices, speaking with our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern. If you'd like to see the video of the full conversation, head over to WSJ.com, and we'll include a link in our show notes. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.